Good evening. We're going to be in 2 Samuel chapter 1 this evening. 2 Samuel chapter 1. And in our reading this evening, we're going to be in kind of a transitionary period on a couple of different levels. First of all, it is the transition between 1 Samuel to 2 Samuel. Now, another thing is that we are on the cusp of a change of leadership in Israel. Saul, who has been king of Israel, has gone off to battle against the Philistines. And now he and his son Jonathan have both perished in this battle. Now it's going to be a little bit of time before David is going to become king over all of Israel. There's going to be a period where part of Israel follows Saul's son Ish-bosheth for a time. But pretty soon God's anointed king David is going to assume the throne. And this is how David finds out here in 2 Samuel chapter 1, beginning in verse 2. And on the third day, behold, a man came from Saul's camp with his clothes torn and dirt on his head. And when he came to David, he fell to the ground and paid homage. And David said to him, "Where do you come from?" And he said to him, "I have escaped from the camp of Israel." And David said to him, "How did it go? Tell me." And he answered, "The people fled from the battle, and also many of the people have fallen and are dead, and Saul and his son Jonathan are dead." Then David said to the young man who told him, "How do you know that Saul and his son Jonathan are dead?" And the young man who told him said, "By chance I happened to be on Mount Gilboa. And there was Saul leaning on his spear, and behold, the chariots and the horsemen were close upon him. And when he looked behind him, he saw me and called to me, and I answered, 'Here I am.' And he said to me, 'Who are you?' And I answered him, 'I am an Amalekite.' And he said to me, 'Stand beside me and kill me, for anguish has seized me, and yet my life still lingers.' So I stood beside him and killed him, because I was sure that he could not live after he had fallen. And I took the crown that was on his head and the armlet that was on his arm, and I have brought them here to my Lord." Here we have recounted for us a sad and really awful ending for a man in Saul who really showed so much promise for God in the beginning. But within this retelling of how Saul died, we don't really see an abnormal rehashing of events until we compare it with how Saul actually died. What will probably be just a flip backwards for you, we read this in 1 Samuel chapter 31 in verse 3. "The battle went heavily against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was badly wounded by the archers. Then Saul said to his armor bearer, 'Draw your sword and pierce me through with it, otherwise these uncircumcised will come and pierce me through and make sport of me.' But his armor bearer would not, for he was greatly afraid, so Saul took his sword and fell on it. When his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he also fell on his sword and died with him. Thus Saul died with his three sons, his armor bearer, and all of his men on that day together." And we see the same account in 1 Chronicles chapter 10. Now this sounds strangely unlike the story that we originally read. It's not because you're crazy, it's because it is. It's different. But instead of wondering why God would allow such a big inconsistency only a page apart within his word, I think it's probably better to question the word of the man who's talking to David. I think he lied. And we're not given the reason why. I mean, maybe he wanted to make come up with some good favor from the next king. Maybe he wanted to be the one to give him what he saw as the cherry on top of him becoming king. Now that Saul is dead, he's like, here's your new crown, and I'm the one who took it for you. Maybe it was a move for survival. While Saul was at war with the Philistines, David was also at war during this time, and it was against the Amalekites. It was against the people that this man came from. Maybe he was worried that David, after becoming king, is going to purge all of the Amalekites. Maybe he's given a reason why he should live. We don't know. But a lie is a lie, and let's see how it turned out for him in verse 11. "Then David took hold of his clothes and tore them, and so did all the men who were with him, and they mourned and wept and fasted until evening for Saul and for Jonathan his son, and for the people of the Lord and for the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. And David said to the young man who told him, 'Where do you come from?' And he answered, 'I am the son of a sojourner in Amalekite.' And David said to him, 'How is it that you are not afraid to put out your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed?' Then David called one of the young men and said, 'Go execute him.' And he struck him down so that he died. And David said to him, 'Your blood be on your head, for your own mouth has testified against you, saying, I have killed the Lord's anointed.'" warnings against lying, it seems like, are usually things that are just reserved for like young children. And usually it's done with stories kind of along this vein where we're given evidence that lying has its consequences. Kind of like the story of the boy who cried wolf. Although it does seem like we're starting to see that less and less being a warning towards kids today. But it doesn't seem like a message that's ever presented to adults. And I ask, is it because we as a people don't have a lying problem anymore? We may have forgotten the truth, but it still is true. Lying has its consequences, even when you get older. But also, pertaining to Christians, Christ has turned us into a people that stands for the opposite. But it is always the consequences that catches our eye initially. And this Amalekite man, he certainly did face them. The trap that we fall into with lying is it doesn't really seem all that blatant sometimes, right? It's not like robbing someone. It's not like killing someone. For the most part, we just say, who cares, right? I can definitely see this Amalekite being like, who cares? Like, Saul is dead one way or the other. Who cares if I just, you know, put in a little bit of extra information to kind of help myself along? Well, he ends up caring a whole lot. And we all know from experience, like, we have all ended up caring a whole lot. Even though initially we may have said it's not that big of a deal, we have ended up caring because of the mistakes that we have paid for with a lie that we have told. But there are also consequences for telling the truth too, right? I mean, it's very obvious in this story that him telling the truth probably would have been or would have been the better option. But here's a question, knowing what we know, knowing about how things ended for him, what if he had done it? Or what if he had killed Saul? What if he had done this? Wouldn't it have been better for him to lie then? Would it cost him his life not to? We read this in Proverbs 13:5. A righteous man hates falsehood. Zephaniah 3 and verse 13. The remnant of Israel will do no wrong and tell no lies, nor will a deceitful tongue be found in their mouth. Psalm 40 and verse 4. How blessed is the man who has made the Lord his trust and has not turned to the proud, nor to those who lapse into falsehood. And we're never really told any different about lying. The answer is, as hard as it may seem, yes. Telling the truth is always the best option. If he would have done it, if he would have killed this man, then it would have been a mistake. And as hard as it is for me to say, and look at me, it's hard for me to say this because I make tons of them. Sometimes we have to face our mistakes. And who knows? I mean, that's kind of where we're left, right? Is who knows? Who knows if this man would have truly been repentant in that kind of situation? Like, who knows if David's heart would have been softened? Who knows if God would have softened his heart? He never gave truth a chance. He might have died either way. Here's the thing. He did die. Wouldn't it have been better to die for telling the truth instead of telling a lie? And I realize that's something like, it's just like, how can I say that, right? I've never been in that situation. How can I say something like that? Well, we have all read the Bible enough to realize that sin is never the right option. Never. Never is anybody ever given the privilege to sin or the right to sin. Like, even if it helps someone or helps, obviously, if it helps ourselves too. And I understand that lying can be seen differently. It seems so many times it seems like a solution that it really doesn't hurt anybody, but there's a lot of good that comes from it. We even see examples of that in the Bible where it doesn't seem like there's anything bad that comes from it. In fact, something good happens from it. And we can look at these accounts and we can take it as signs that it's okay to lie. But should we? Isaac, he lied about Rebekah being his sister when he went to go live with the Philistines. The Bible didn't say that was a bad thing, but it didn't say that it was okay either. Rahab lied about the spies. Something good came from that, right? Rahab is a woman of faith. Rahab has a place in Hebrews 11 because of her faith. But what is it that's praised about Rahab in Hebrews 11? In verse 31, by faith Rahab the harlot did not perish along with those who were disobedient after she had welcomed the spies in peace. Never, ever is it said that the lie was okay. But it is what kept the spies safe, right? Well, who says that? why is it that we need to believe that lies are necessary in some situations? when it is faith in God that is necessary in all situations. Isn't that what we read in Psalm 40 and verse 4? How blessed is the man who has made the Lord his trust. The Lord is our trust. Not anything that we manufacture or that we make. And in fact, we read a fact about God in Titus 1 and verse 2, and that's God cannot lie. So if God cannot lie, what gives me the right to? Jesus defined himself as the truth. If God cannot lie, if Jesus is the truth, then I can assume that if Jesus was in Rahab's situation, he would not have lied. So what would he have done? Well, I don't know. Maybe he would have said something. Maybe he wouldn't have said something. All I know is that I don't have more rights than Jesus does. But what if a life is on the line? What if it is impossible not to lie? Well, I don't know if that situation will ever arise, but I do know with people it is impossible, but not with God. For all things are possible with God. And I also know that we don't worship a God who abandons us in the time that we need him most. And I also know that the majority of times that people lie, including myself, it is not because a life is on the line. Maybe reputation. Maybe it's just something small to make us look better. Whatever it is, with the wisdom that God gives us, big or small, sin's not the best option. And it's not the people that God made us to be. We read in John 8 and verse 31. So Jesus was saying to those Jews who had believed in him, if you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. Jesus says, continue in my word. Continue in it. That is what makes us disciples. And we notice that the word that is missing here is unless. Jesus never says, continue in my word, do what's right, unless the situation calls for something differently. We never see that. But we do see what separates us. We see what we know. We see what sets us free, and that is truth. And if Jesus has done so much for us to stand in truth, I can't think of a situation where we shouldn't do that, or where we couldn't do that. But the truth is, and sometimes thinking about things like this just reminds us of it, life is hard. We need help. God is our help. And Jesus is our help. And he offers the greatest help to anybody who needs it, and that is salvation in his name. If anybody needs that this evening, if you need to be washed in his name and be baptized, please come forward while we stand and as we sing.